We've got our boy Darren Dreger, our hockey insider. Haven't spoken to Dregs in a while. He'll join us in about 5 minutes on what's really going on here between the NHL and the PA. And it's about money and deferring money and escrow and all that kind of stuff. And really, it's details that the most people, myself included, are not that interested in, but I just want to know when you're going to play. You know, is it going to cause an issue in terms of actually playing? That's the question.
It might. Like, I was going through it today and talking to a few people. I think cooler heads will prevail and both sides want to sort it out. But I love how Alan Walsh has just got to weigh in on everything. He hates the league so much. The league could be like, hey, we're giving everyone bonuses, we're doing this and that, and he would still have a complaint about it. Like, this guy gets paid by the league technically, too, because the players pay him, you know, a percentage
based on a 50-50
percentage
of the revenue,
But, you know, he's got something to say negative about the league all the time. Like, if they're not having a revenue stream coming in, if you don't have butts in the seats, they're trying to figure out a way around that. And it's I read Pierre LeBrun's article, which I thought was quite informative. They're asking for more deferral. They're not asking for prorated. They're asking, hey, we might have to defer some money and kick the can down the road here because we're not going to have the actual cash coming in. If we, you know, if they have a Canadian division and there's no fans in the seats, how do you expect to make money?
Jamie, let me ask you this. Under these circumstances, these times that we're in, is what the league doing, do you think, is completely unreasonable?
No, not unreasonable. But
so then you got to figure it out and play, or you don't play and you make zero money. That's the
exactly.
way I look at it.
As a player,
I don't break down, I don't break down escrow percentages. Whatever the nonsense, they go back and forth. That's not my shtick. That's for Mike Johnson and smarter people and yourself. But if it's not unreasonable, like, you got to figure it out, or you play and you make nothing. So if that's what you want to do, like, make nothing and not play, then make a stand. But
They're not going to do that. You're right, O. And it's you know, you don't give yourself enough credit. You pay attention to this stuff. It's more about just, you know, finding common ground. You're right. We're not going to dive into the numbers here and say this, because nobody cares about that. And certainly fans don't care about millionaire players and billionaire owners. And that's all you read in the comment situation. Well, why are you going to help these billionaires out? Well, a lot of these companies that are billionaires, including MLSE, they're hemorrhaging money left and right, too. It's not like all of their investments in all of the restaurants and everything that they own are nailing it out of the park right now. It's tough times for everyone, and that includes the people that are fortunate enough to own these teams and to give us that entertainment value. That's my two cents on it.
Yeah, no, I can see it from both sides. I mean, ultimately, I understand, I think we all do, that we're not through this pandemic.
No.
So there are still going to be adjustments to the business plan. And I get it. If I'm the players, I don't like the fact that they came to an agreement 4 months ago already being changed, because it will never be reverse. The players in the history of their union have never gone back to the league 4 months later and said, you know what, we just signed, we actually don't like it now that much. We want to make an adjustment. They'd get laughed out of the room, and Bettman would say, I'm not even going to accept your call. Shut up and go play. So I get it that the players don't like this. I totally get it. But I also ultimately accept that business models are completely in the dark on a day-to-day basis. Because 4 months ago, maybe the projection was, we will have fans in the stands. You know, I don't know what their thinking was. But it's not today. You know, it might be with some teams, but it's a limited amount. Everyone is hemorrhaging money. Everyone is still trying to figure this out. The ratings are down across the board in sports. There's a lot still going on, and we're still in the midst of the pandemic. So I'm not surprised that the league and the owners are like, you know, we were off in terms of the money, because ultimately it is a 50-50 split. It's not like the players, as far as I know, are not going to be granted access to the ultimate revenue.
Right.
You know,
the
eventually
money,
they're going to see it and say, okay, we deserve 50% of that.
Right.
But so in the end,
wasn't
I'm not
this
surprised.
Negotiated during COVID times? Like, they
yeah,
had
it was.
No idea this
was. Before
this
they returned
up.
To play. Remember, it was we got to get a new CBA done before we returned to play. They got it done. It was amicable. It was all good.
But
and
no
now
idea,
the league is,
no idea this was ahead of them? Like,
well,
I don't know.
I think what it is they were trying to get through that season and thinking, okay, the next season, we can defer this next season and push it into, you know, if you want to play 82 games, we'll start in February and go right through to September. And I think they took a step back and go, we have expansion coming around the corner. We want to have a reset.
The Olympics, a new TV deal down on the stage.
Exactly. You've got a lot of things where they're like, okay, we might have to have a shortened season here and have a reset on the calendar, you know, through that. And again, I use the term, Hayes, it's your term, kick the can down the road. That's what they're looking to do. And I, you know, going through the numbers, you don't want to bore people, but basically they were, you know, talking about escrow and it was capped at 20% and then it scaled down to 6%. They're asking for a little bit more. And it's basically trying to balance the books instead of just hammering through this. And the players have to be mindful of it too. And yeah, they're saying there's an additional 16%. It's not prorated, which means you don't get it. It's more like, hey, we need to defer.
You'll see it in 3 years, four years, 5 years.
And that's the thing, when we can have what's called financial recovery through all of this.
Now, the concern, though, from the players is if you're already doing this now, what's to stop you in 6 months from doing it again?
Yep, then in a year
from doing it again? And then eventually saying, you know what, actually, we've crunched the numbers and you're not getting this or you're not getting that. Like, I understand the hesitation from the players. I wouldn't like if it I was the players either. I wouldn't trust Bettman. He has no right to be trusted based on his history. He locks these guys out whenever he gets an opportunity. And
right.
4 months after a new deal, he's already coming back and trying to adjust it. I get it. But it's a pandemic, and I think we all understand it's tough to really pinpoint where we're going. Here's our hockey insider, Darren Dreger. Dregs, when all is said and done here, what's your impression that this is going to cause a big issue or little issue, no issue? Are they going to be playing? Where do you see this all going between the PA and the owners?
Well, it's causing a big issue right now. There's no question about that. You know, there's lots of talk among players, certainly among the 31 executive members of the National Hockey League Players Association, players, that is. They, I'm sure, feel to some degree that this is unfair. I mean, what has been a surprise in this pandemic? They negotiated a CBA extension in the pandemic. They knew that the second wave was going to be tough. So, you know, the NHL and the NHLPA have worked in partnership through a very successful return to play, Stanley Cup playoffs and Stanley Cup championship with zero positive tests inside the bubble. So what has changed in 4 months since they agreed and signed off on the extension to the CBA? That's what players want to understand, and they can understand it. And look, it's trying times. There's no question about that. But what? Just to play devil's advocate, what if the roles were reversed here? You know, what if the players in 4 months into a CBA went, you know what? We don't like the fact that we're paying 20% escrow.
Brian just mentioned that, Darren. He
said, would never happen.
Yeah, he would laugh the phone call away. He wouldn't even take the call.
They wouldn't. No chance. We've locked into this thing for at least the next 6 years. So I feel like there's a sense of betrayal in this from the foot soldiers, who are the players, no doubt about that. And I do feel like there is going to be a middle ground. They're going to find some sort of compromise here, because both sides can see how important it is to play a 2021 season, as short as it might be. 60 games or fewer, it's important to the NHL and to the players. But the players feel like they've given enough. And I know that the tone on that NHLPA executive committee call yesterday was dire. It was, we don't want to have to give another penny. So that's where the two sides are digging in. Now, I know that Don Fehr and Gary Bettman spoke today, perhaps more than once, but I don't get the sense that anything was moved forward. And look, if the focus remains on January 1st, as we're reminded by the National Hockey League of starting 2021, then they've got 10 days to figure this out.
That's what I was going to ask you, Dregs. Is there a date you're looking at where it's like, if they don't get moving in kind of this direction by this particular time, we could have a problem on our hands, something I know you don't want. We don't want another Dreger face picture taken.
Well, thankfully, that might be the upside of a pandemic from a professional perspective, because I won't be allowed to travel. So unless you see it on a Zoom or some sort of DeGero call, then that's not likely to happen. Well, I mean, look, what happens is, you know, if you don't get going by, say, January 15th, you know, then the calendar shrinks. And instead of having the playoffs begin in mid-May, as would be the hope with a 60-game season, and finishing up at some point in mid-July, you start pushing, right? And I don't think that anyone wants to do that. I don't think the players want to do that. They'd like to get back to whatever normal is as soon as possible. And by hoisting a Stanley Cup in mid-July, that allows you to get a good chunk of your summer. And then when you go into, I guess, 21-22, it would be, maybe now the calendar is starting to look more normal. So when you look at January 1st to 15th, the next 10 days will dictate that, but there are lots of people out there, player agents, et cetera, who don't think that there's any hope of starting on January 1st.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to see that. And I find it hard to believe that both parties don't know that also, and in particular the league, who ultimately dictate and determine the schedule and come up with the schedule and unveil the schedule. And I am starting to see a lot of similarities between the way baseball's negotiation played out and the way the NHL's negotiation is playing out, where baseball, the players and the owners came up with a deal like in March, early into COVID, and then all of a sudden it had to be changed by the owners, and there was a big issue and it blew up publicly and both sides were going back and forth and not happy, which is very similar to what's happening right now. And then in the end, when it was all said and done and they started playing, they played a 60-game season. Rob Manfred, the commissioner, went on, I believe, the Dan Patrick show and said, well, I always knew it was going to be 60, and I always knew the date it would start. And it's like, wait a minute, then what were you doing? Like, why were you playing that game and playing that role? And I kind of feel like Bettman might be in a similar spot. He's got a date, he's got the games, and it's just a matter of starting when he wants to start and how
maybe
they're going to get there.
Maybe, but how they get there, Brian, is a tough one. You know, there's talk in the province of B.C. as an example of closing the borders. So nobody's getting into B.C. if they opt to go down that path. You know, Winnipeg, Manitoba's in lockdown. So where are the Winnipeg Jets and the Vancouver Canucks going to play if that happens? You look at the numbers in Alberta. They're not getting much better. And you've got the mayor of Calgary who's, you know, starting to talk about much more restrictive measures. Now, of course, you can grant exemptions, right? You know, that's up to the provincial governments, up to the federal government, and up to the NHL and the NHLPA to massage all of that. But there are some considerable hurdles here. So I don't think, specific to the NHL, it's as easy as flipping the switch and saying, okay, we've got a 7-team Canadian division, and here are the geographic divisions that we're going to play with in the NHL. We want everyone to play in their own buildings. We are going to play back-to-backs in the same buildings. We are going to have a 60-game schedule. That might be best-case scenario. It very well could be best-case scenario. And so far, the National Hockey League has enjoyed best-case scenario with return to play and everything else as we've discussed. But this financial matter, it's a big one. I think if they can get past this, whatever the compromise is from a players association perspective, and the compromise has to be from the owners, if they can get by this in the next week, then there's a fighting chance of getting those games played in a fashion that's going to be safe from a health perspective to some degree.
From a bigger picture standpoint, what's your understanding in terms of expanded rosters and, you know, like what we saw with the bubble and based on COVID? And if it gets to that point, would that allow for more potential signings? Like, would it be almost like a false cap in a way? I mean, how would that all work?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, the player agents and the players who are still out there and available, and some who are restricted free agents, are still waiting for dates. You know, they want answers to all the questions that we're asking. What might roster size look like? You know, if you're an unrestricted free agent, like Mike Hoffman as an example, is that perfect fit going to be there? And if it is going to be there, it's going to be because the team either moved out a contract to make room somehow, some way, or as a player that needs to be put on LTIR. So, you know, there are guys who have made a bit of money, who feel confident in their abilities, and the fact that there is going to be interest, that are playing that game of patience. And then you've got, you know, the agents who represent the bigger restricted free agents, like Matt Barzal of the New York Islanders, that comes to mind, who's also willing to be patient until you have some dates and some logistics that are looked after in that regard. So the hope is that things loosen up in that sense. But developmentally, there are also concerns from club management wondering, okay, well, what happens? You know, we've seen what's going on in the East Coast League, right? Well, there are NHL teams, the Toronto Maple Leafs included, who have players developing in that league. So what happens to those players? There's not a lot of jobs available in the European leagues anymore. And then you extend that further. The hope is that the Ontario Hockey League gets going in early February. But what if it doesn't? You know, what do you do with your draft picks? You know, and having a taxi squad at the NHL level sounds good in theory until you've got to do it, right? And how difficult is it as a young player to develop when you're not playing every single night? You know, you might be practicing with the main team. So they're going to have to devise and figure out all of those issues. But right now, that seems to be secondary. I think that they'll make quick work of that when they get over the economic issues.
With Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider, I believe tomorrow is a big anniversary here in this market. I believe that'll be the one-year anniversary since Mike Babcock was let go,
right?
Which feels like an eternity ago when you consider
wow.
everything that's happened in the world. Yeah, it was a year ago. and, you know, the Leafs have moved on, obviously. Sheldon Keefe is the head coach, but we haven't heard much from Mike Babcock. And obviously he went out the way he went out, and stories came out about his tenure here and, you know, maybe in Detroit. But I feel like for the most part that has blown over. And I know he's still getting paid a lot of money for the next few years here in Toronto. But I still believe he's coming back to the NHL at some point.
Yeah.
Do you share that belief, Dregs? And how
do
you see it playing out?
No, I do. You know, Ole might jump out of his chair when I say this. He's too good of a coach not to coach again.
Darren, I don't disagree with that, but I know he's a good coach. His record speaks for itself. That doesn't mean I can't dislike him.
No, hey, and that's fair. You know, and hey, here's hoping that Mike Babcock has learned a few things about through this experience. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a guy that prides himself on never stopping to learn. And so maybe he's educated himself in this process by talking to many people outside of hockey. He's connected in some weird ways, not just to other sports, but to, you know, world leaders, et cetera. So he's not just sitting in a hunting stand in Ohio, although that's right. what he was doing last week. I mean, you know, he's looking after his family. He's enjoying the downtime in his life, but there is no question the fire in the belly burns. And when the opportunity presents, he's going to think long and hard about jumping back. And if it's the right fit, he will be on a bench again as soon as possible.
I think he will be. And if you actually look back at this, guys, like outside of a couple things, he was 100% right about this team. 100% right. It just Sheldon Keefe just polished his comments up a little bit different. But everything that came out of Sheldon Keefe's mouth when he was going through the ups and downs of this, of what he went through in his abbreviated season, Mike Babcock said the exact same thing. Am I wrong?
Yeah, he was more blunt, but you're right. He did. I mean, Keefe called him immature. Keefe, during the offseason, has come out and said, we need way more from these guys.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, Mike Babcock's mistake, I suppose, was believing that he could come in and quickly turn the Toronto Maple Leafs into a Stanley Cup contender in 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I think he realized pretty quickly that that wasn't going to be a reality. That's next to impossible to do in the NHL. If he'd come in as a closer, maybe after Coach One and potentially after Sheldon Keefe, well, who's to say that, you know, he wouldn't have found a way to lead a more veteran team to a Stanley Cup championship and have a statue outside Scotiabank within the next 10 years. I mean, that could have happened. It's just the timing wasn't right. He accepted the job in good faith. You know, the Maple Leafs as an organization thought he was the guy to turn the corner and lead them to the promised land, and it was obviously too much too soon.
Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Darren Dreger, a TSN Hockey Insider, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Experience the low-maintenance cost of driving a self-charging hybrid electric from Maple Toyota. Purchase in-person or online at mapletoyota.com and make the switch, drive a hybrid. Yeah, tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of
is that
Babcock
famous
being
meme?
Let go.
Is that your famous meme? where we were, you were on it, weren't we talking, and you're like, breaking news?
Oh, yeah, that was, that's, I believe it was.
It's your famous meme where, like, we were on TV, and was it Grappler got into your
Grappler
ear?
Grappler was in my ear, and I looked, and I almost broke my neck staring into the control room because the Grappler, in a sultry voice, was speaking sweet nothings to me about Babcock being fired.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if I heard it properly.
Yeah, you kind of like stare into space and go, hold on, we got breaking news here. Like, that was a meme for the longest time. We got to see if we can find it.
That needs to come back out into the real world, and we need to start using that meme a little bit more. We'll use it tomorrow for sure. But,
yeah,
you know, Babcock, listen, he went out the way he went out because they played so horribly for him.
Yeah.
You know, he lost the room, quote-unquote, whichever way you want to define it. It was awful the way it just sputtered out of control. And you knew it was coming. And I think the biggest, it wasn't even a mistake, it was just a happenstance, was he and Kyle Dubas clearly were never on the same page.
Nor like, the player. The players had enough, too.
The players had enough. But the players knew that Dubas had their back, too, right? They had the ability to show that they had enough because he was going and Dubas wanted him out. And I believe that. I don't, you know it definitively, but based on the actions, based on the way everything played out, I don't get the impression like Babcock and Dubas were ever that close, ever on the same page. And
what
Dubas
about the classic line, though, Hazy, where he said, "Me and Doobie, we're going to be buddies. When we're going to be a lot closer when, like, 20 years from now."
That was bogus, obviously.
Okay.
I mean, he issued that statement when he was let go. I don't even think he mentioned Kyle Dubas. He mentioned Lou. He mentioned Tannenbaum and Lou.
He
had no time for... And vice versa, you know,
but
and
you
that's
had
fine.
To know.
That happens in professional relationships. But, like, to give Babcock credit, which is what I'm trying to get to, yeah, they tanked the first year. They made the playoffs the second. Like, they had not made the playoffs in years, and they went to the playoffs basically every year he was here, but couldn't get them beyond that.
He did some good things. That's where you're pointing to, Brian, and that's where I was kind of going back to is, you know, some of his flaws, certainly, and I think there's a shelf life with guys that are cut from that cloth. We talk about it. Daryl Sutter, Torts has done a really good job of kind of changing that narrative because I think Torts has learned, you know, to shape the way that he, I guess, works with young athletes. I think Babs will have to adjust, but... He's still a good coach, and how many times did we say this, guys, when we were sitting in studio last year? We're like, yeah, you know, that sounded like if we would have just turned the TV off and Sheldon Keefe was talking, that was Mike Babcock talking.
Yeah, if you read the transcript on numerous occasions, you're like, that was something Mike Babcock would say. Sheldon Keefe, because it's still the same team. You know, the players are who they are, and they show their true colors with Babcock, and they show them in many ways with Keefe. And listen, the mood from the organization has changed. The messaging has changed.
Right.
I think Kyle Dubas is a very supportive GM. I think these players are very lucky that he is as supportive as he is because he does get their bags, which I understand, and I think that's in large part a good thing. But Sheldon Keefe has said on the record during the offseason, we are going to demand more, which means he hasn't seen what he wants to see, and neither did Babcock. Babcock was more blunt about it. People were blaming Babcock. Keefe wasn't going to get the blame because he's so early into the job. But Sheldon Keefe's not a stupid man either. He knows he's not far off from taking the blame for the player's shortcomings either.
No kidding.
Right?
Right.
So
yeah.
You guys always say it. What did Pat Burns used to say? You know, make sure you get to them before they get to you or whatever it was.
Yeah, don't let the players screw with the players before they screw with you because by the time they get to you, you're done.
You're done.
Yeah, you're right.
So Sheldon Keefe's not a stupid guy. He understands that. And as for Babcock's next destination, who knows? But Seattle still hasn't hired a coach. I don't think he's going there. I don't think that would be a smart play for him or them, quite frankly, because
that's not a fit.
He's not a rosy kind of salesman. Hey, this is great.
That smells of Jerry Gallant type of, you know, scenario. That
Bruce
type
Boudreau
of coach,
something
Boudreau.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but Babcock will get back in. I have no doubt about that. And the Olympics are here in 2022. I don't think he's coaching the Olympics, but the last time he went there, he won gold.
There's probably a small part of him that thinks he's getting that job regardless. Olympics, I'm the guy. Let's get this moving.
Yeah.
He's probably got that in his mind, too. If I get back in now, it'll give me time to say, who knows? That's just probably the way he thinks, though. Mark my words.
That wouldn't be surprising if he thought that. Yeah, if I get back in and improve, different spot, different guy, but still great coach, send me back right to the Olympics where all I do is win gold. Can't take that away from him. I mean, that's just a fact. What he did in 2010 and 2014 speaks for itself. 99% of it was the players, the roster, but he clearly did something, pushed the right buttons.